everybody. It's Victoria Randall. I'm so excited because I am getting ready to go live with Miss Melton. She is the owner of Legacy. Let me make sure I get it correct. Legacy School of Healthcare, located in Alabama. And I'm going to bring her on in just a moment here so that we can interview her and talk about you know, her experience as a CNA school owner, how long she's owned her school, some of the things that have worked really well for her, and other things that maybe she would caution you against or advise you against. So I'm super excited to have her on The Secret Cocktail. I have my questions ready. A lot of you have submitted questions that you want me to ask, so I'll be sure to try to get to as many of them as I can. But I want to thank you guys so much for joining me. And as we go through the interview, if you guys have questions, please, by all means, feel free to place them into the chat so that I can make sure that I ask her
to take to start a CNA school, right? So, oh, here we go. We're getting ready to get Ms. Melton on there. Hey there. Hi, Ty. Thank you so much for joining us with this interview with The Secret Cocktail. We really appreciate it. All right, so tell us a little bit about the name of your school and where you are located.
So the name of the school is Legacy School of Healthcare, and we are located in Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
All right, so tell us what all courses you offer.
Currently, it's just CNA, and then we also do, like, community events and then, like, the CPR through American Heart Association. But mainly it's focusing on the CNA classes.
Okay. And how long have you been in operation?
Since April of this year. So we're
April of this year.
Still really new.
All right. So 6 months in, I'm sure you've learned a lot in this time frame. So we're hoping you can impart that knowledge and share that knowledge with everyone here. Yeah. I know I asked you about, you know, some of your fears going into starting a CNA school when we talked, and, you know, the whole reason why you came into this business. So if you can talk a little bit about those fears. I know you said one of the biggest fears is failure, and everyone has that fear of potential failure, right? So how have you been able to overcome that fear thus far?
I guess because I started initially, it was just like, okay, make it work since you already put in work type of thing. But it's still kind of, I guess it now it's kind of subsided a little bit, but it was still in the back of my head throughout the whole process mm-hmm. that, okay, this is not going to work. Before I actually started, it took me about 2017 was the first time I did some research on it, and my mother-in-law gave me the idea. And we were just talking, mm-hmm. like, you know, the aides didn't seem to know how to handle information that they were getting, like abnormal vital signs or something like that. And so we were just like, well, maybe we can change that. And so I started looking into it, and then I got excited about it. But then it was like, well, nursing homes offer this training for free. So like, mm-hmm. well, there's really no purpose in starting it. And so then I kept looking and I kept looking. I was like, okay, if it's still on my mind, I might as well look more into it. And I was all for it again. And then I was talking to the Alabama Department of Public Health, which is the kind of the person who approves it. And every time I talked mm-hmm. to them, they were kind of like, why are you doing this? Like, don't do this. This is not a good idea. And I'm like, well, yes. I was like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this if the people who are supposed to approve me are telling me that I shouldn't do this. So that was like, even after I got approved, and I would call them asking them questions for more information on things, and he was still like, I don't see why you're doing this. And I'm like, okay, maybe I shouldn't.
Wow.
You know, so it was just in the back of my head, like, this is just not going to work. But I did the paperwork, you know, the beginning steps. So I might as well just keep going. And so far, I've proved him wrong in it not working. It has been really good and very beneficial to the community. I've had a lot of good mm-hmm. feedback. So I'm glad, I guess, I didn't listen to those voices and those people. But at the same time, it's still kind of like, in my head just because so many people put doubts in there when I was trying to start. So it's kind of like, well, is it going to eventually go back down, you know? So it's still there a little bit, but I think I'm over the biggest part so far.
Wow, that is very damning that the body that's supposed to be giving you accreditation is giving you that much of. Now, I will admit, a lot of these bodies that I've worked with, it's not easy working with them. Some of them, it's not easy working with them to get approved, and others are very helpful. But for the body to actually kind of come at you like, why are you even doing this? Wow, that's a good one for you to overcome.
Yeah, I'm not even like changing his words. He was just like, I don't see why you would do this. This is not going to help you or help. I was like, okay. Like, he literally said it that bluntly several times.
Well, let's talk about, since you've been in business, what would you say, like, for instance, your last class or one of your latest classes, how many students have you been able to enroll?
So my last class, I started with 14. And I think that's the...
Wow.
I think that's the largest. Yeah, and this class that I have now, we have, I think, 14 again. I think it started at 16, but we're down to 14 now. So that's like my average, about 14.
So what is your max that you can have?
For the classroom part, I could probably do up to 20. But mm-hmm. when it comes to skills, the actually doing the hands-on part, I'll have to get like the other instructors, of course, involved, because I can't do all of it myself. But probably 20 at a time would be my max.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Now, listen to this woman's story, you guys. This is huge. Being told this is not a good idea multiple times, still going into it, and 6 months in is enrolling courses of 14, 16 people at a time. That is huge. Okay. Even in a community where nursing homes are offering this free. And I'm telling people, don't be afraid of that. People don't want to be tied down to a nursing home for a year of their life, all over $700 worth of tuition. And if they have a different choice to opt out of that, they will. Okay. She is proof of that. They will. So when you hear people say, oh, there's so many nursing homes that are already offer it for free, why would they come here? They have their reasons.
Yeah.
Okay. She's proving it. I love that. I love that. Thank you guys so much for joining. Hey, Sade. You guys, please definitely click the share button, because somebody needs to hear this. Trust me. So I need to hear this. I love this. Okay. I'm serious, because I can't tell you how many people I had. Somebody call me today and they were like, is there really money in this? You know, isn't this a saturated market? What would you say to a person that asks you, is this a saturated market?
Well, this is what my husband tells me all the time. He's like, even if it's saturated, it's how you present it. So that is what's going to make the difference. How you market and how you present your business is going to make the world of difference. Because I'm not going to lie, I got a little worried, because I would search other pages and things like that, because I was trying to find some inspiration and just see how it was going. Because again, I had so much negativity thrown at me at the beginning. So I was trying to see some other success stories. And when I was looking, I was like, well, they've been in business for this long and this, it looks like this, and they've been in business for this long and it looks like this. And I was like, well, I wonder how long it's going to take me. So I think definitely just the presentation and knowing who you want in your classes and targeting them the right way has definitely like made a huge difference, because there are people, like you said, who, and I think we talked about this before, like I would make a post about my school and then people would come under that post and say, hey, but they're offering free classes at the nursing home. And I'm like, really? You couldn't make a separate post to promote them? Like, really? So I think it's all about the presentation and how you market it, and then just being good at what you're doing. Like, if you are good at what you're doing, then people are going to want quality over, you know, just what they can get. So I think that also makes
sense. Right. What's the cheapest and the quickest, right?
Versus what's really quality and what's going to train you the right way and set you up for success, versus just throwing you out there and you still wind up being on an abuse list or something like that.
Right. Sade says, good advice from your husband. Location is key. Let me say this. I agree, and I tell people a lot, think about your niche. Like, identify a niche. Don't say everybody. I want any and everybody that's willing to come to my school. No, you really need to identify a niche and learn how to market to them specifically. And you become known for that, and people will come to you for that. So if you had to determine what your niche is, what would you say it is? What have you kind of identified? What type of customer seems to gravitate to you?
I definitely know it's more women. I want more men, but it's definitely women. And typically the age range is about 18 to 35. And that's pretty much like the way I target. I kind of get that age range, okay. And then I kind of know what they're into. Because I see what's on Facebook, what they're clicking on, what they're liking, and then I kind of get them that way, because if it's going to grab their attention, at least I got their attention, and then they can read and, you know, find out what's next. So I try to grab their attention first based on what I already know that they're into and what they like.
So let me ask you, for people who are considering, okay, should I do a day class? Should I do an evening? Should I do a weekend? Let me first ask you, what class offerings do you offer?
So
can you,
it kind of broke up a little bit, but I do mainly day, because I've had a few night, inquiries, but it's only been maybe five out of my whole, stretch. So I haven't set up a,
I think we lost her, but I'm sure she will come back. I want to talk about, you know, choosing a day class versus an evening class and what the benefits are, because that really goes back to your niche, right? Who is your target customer? If you are targeting people who have kids, then you need to think about that. You know, would an evening class be beneficial for them, or maybe a weekend? If you are targeting people who work 9 to 5, then maybe a day class won't be best for them, right? Maybe you want to look at potentially an evening class. So those are the things that, when I say, like, thinking about your target customer and figuring out what their life is like, you want to build courses around that for them. So thank you. Welcome back. Sorry about that. I'm not sure what happened.
But I mainly offer day options, and that's been working pretty good. And I also have a blended learning option, to where they can watch me do a live presentation just for the lecture part. And then once they've done that, they'll come in for scheduled days to do their lab. So, and those are long days. So they're like 7 to 7 every time they come in.
So let's talk about that. So in Alabama, you can have blended courses. So can you explain to everyone who doesn't understand what a blended course is, talk to them a little bit more about that?
So they can start online with material, however you, I guess, choose to do that online material. And then at least that's how I do mine. Once they complete like the online material, then they come in person. We regurgitate the information to each other just so I know that they actually understood it. And then we'll go into actually doing the skills, but they would have been kind of had that material before, and it's really no different in the classroom setting, because it's video presentation of me doing the lecture. So really no different. It was just, you choose to sit at home and listen, or you choose to sit in the classroom and listen. And then, like I said, once they come in, we regurgitate it over and over again, because I need to know that you understood what I said in video. And then they go ahead and we go into the skill portion.
Awesome. So what type of a platform do you host your lectures on?
Blackboard.
Okay. All right. So Sade says, very nice idea. Do most states approve blended learning? To be honest, not very many states do blended learning. I think West Virginia maybe one, Illinois is one, Alabama is another one. There's a few, but not a lot. Okay. But it's a great option, very great option, right? I love that. So getting approved, there was definitely two different types of approvals for that, right? So can you
No,
explain to
not.
people how that approval process differed?
So for me, it actually wasn't well, partly because who is it? The community college system also has to approve our programs, and so I had to submit two different curriculums to them. The Department of Health, they kind of just like said, as long as the testing company approves of it, then they're fine. So, and I had to clarify that millions of times because, yeah, we talked about that before because they were just like not very helpful. So, but other than that, I think those were, it wasn't too much different. You just had to submit slightly different paperwork, but not too much.
Right. The whole process isn't different, but in terms of, I guess, can you talk to them a little bit about for the blended part, since it's not in classroom, but it's more of online, how do you submit to them that portion online? What does that look like?
I just had to make sure my hours and stuff still matched. And that was pretty easy just because the video, it has a time on it. So as long as it matched what I put in my curriculum, or I think that's the word, yeah, curriculum, then it was pretty much good to go. And then I just had to allocate how many for what wasn't, for the hours or the amount that wasn't covered in the video, I had to kind of allocate how much time would be toward other stuff. So with the online, I also make them do like discussion questions, quizzes, and different things like that online. So I just had to allocate the time to that. But that's also easy just because you put a time limit on it. So you know how much time that they're spending in that each section. So as long as my hours add up, then I was good. Which was really hard, by the way, because math.
How long would you say the whole process of getting approved took for you? From the moment you started the paperwork to getting approved, how long would you say it took?
Do you mean like paperwork just for the school portion or the whole business?
Both.
Okay, so for my
Explain one from the other.
the whole business took December officially. I officially started December of 18 up until April of 19 for the entire business portion, just because I had to go through rezoning and different things like that. And so they had to do hearings for all that kind of stuff. And then the actual the community college system portion took about I would say a month. And then the Alabama Department of Health took about, I would say, another month. So about 2 months just for the curriculum portion, and then from December to April for the entire business portion.
So I'm hearing you say probably about 6 months time it took you to get everything going. That sound about right? So then, now in terms of getting everything up and going, business plan, did you write a business plan beforehand?
I did have a business plan. And I pretty much to it, everything that I put in the business plan, came true, except for like one portion of it, and that was my marketing. And then the only other thing now is, of course, adding to it, because initially when I started, I just wanted to do CNA, but now it's like, okay, I want to do more, so I do want to expand the business plan. But definitely having the business plan gets all of your thoughts together, and making sure everything lines up. And then if it's a really good detailed business plan, it mine at least, it followed like to the T. Everything just kind of worked out, minus the
Yeah,
hiccup.
because there's so much research.
It is.
Yeah, so much research and getting your thought process and how you want things to go and then how they're really supposed to go once you do the research and find out and putting it into that business plan is so crucial. Let me tell you something. Let me give you this. This is kind of a devastating fact, but I do surveys every so often with people who follow me, and 90% of people who are moving into starting a CNA school said they do not have a business plan. 90%. That is startling.
Yeah.
That is kind of setting yourself up for failure. So I can't stress enough, and I'm so glad to hear that you already had a business plan and you put that together, and that took time too, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I
don't think it took like a long, long time. The actual part of putting the research of doing the school itself took a lot of time, just because, you know, I just wanted to compare different states, you know, learn exactly what needs to be done, how it needs to be done. But once you do that ground, the foundation research, and then when you start your business mm-hmm. plan, for me, it didn't take that long. It maybe took a week at the most to get it really good, but that's not including that initial research that I had to do.
Right. Okay, so good. Thanks for sharing that. So guys, the business plan phase does not take long at all. I mean, just do it. It just takes dedication and research that is annoying, but just do it and you're done. She got hers done in a week. I have a course that sets you up to do it in 30 days. Just do it. All right, so we have some questions here. Patrice said, this is really cool. Have you thought about getting a contract with the school system to market the high schoolers so that they can transition into adults through your program?
I have. I reached out to them actually like right when I got started. But so far, both the city and the county school system have denied me. so maybe mm-hmm. I'll revisit that and maybe next year sometime. But when I first asked them, they said no.
You know, that's a hard one to do. A lot of people think it's a little easy, but it's not. And in some states, you even have to get approval through secondary education, which is different than higher education in some states. So it's like a whole second approval you have to get. But then third of all, you have to get the school system to write you into their budget, which can take a whole year for that to happen, right? So you've got to get written into their budget, and then that can take a year before they even move forward with you doing that. So I love that idea, Patrice, but it's not as easy. It takes a lot of time to try to do that. And then you got to know somebody. You got to get hint to you. Yeah, start going to those board meetings for the school council and get to know those people, and then let's see where it goes from there. All right, Ted says, how is your site set up? How many classrooms do you have? How many labs? How many offices, and et cetera?
So my classroom is like tables, just like 6-foot tables and chairs, and then we have a whiteboard, and then lab, we have three sites, I guess. There's two that are kind of out in the open so that everybody can, you know, just look on and put input and stuff like that. And then we have a lab/validation area where it's off in a whole separate room itself, but it's set up just like the hospital mm-hmm. room or the nursing home facility room. And you know, it's more private and secluded so that because their nerves are going to get the best of them. So everybody's not just like watching them during validation. So practice mm-hmm. in there, and they test in there for validation.
Okay. Awesome. I like that. I like that. Good. And then they're not distracted by the other students off to the side doing other things, because I see that happen a lot. Cool. So I'm going to ask your question in just a moment, Sade, because that's a good one. But my question for you is, how many instructors do you have, and do you have any business partners?
So it's just me as far as business partners. But instructors is kind of like a family affair, I guess. and they're just really mm-hmm. there, supplemental. Just when I need them, I can call on them. And they are also set up to be my state proctors. But my mom, who is also a nurse, she has her doctorate in nursing. She comes in and helps out. And then my mother-in-law, who is also a nurse and has her doctorate in nursing, she comes in and helps me out when I need it. So those are my other two instructors.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, having family help you and they're willing to, that's good. So tell us, I didn't even ask you about your background and your credentialing, so people know. Tell us a little bit about your nursing background.
So I've been a nurse for about 6 years, 2013. I went to UAB, mm-hmm. University of Alabama in Birmingham, graduated in 2013 with my bachelor's. And other than that, I've done travel nursing. I've done mainly hospital settings. I've done assisted living and home health. And then I've done some case management. So yeah, that's my little background.
Okay. All right. So Sade says, tell us about, let's revisit this rezoning. She said that you had to rezone your area. What was that about? What, you know, and this is a good question because this could be a thing that could hold you up if you don't realize or even know that zoning is an issue. Okay. So let's talk about that. Tell us about your zoning issue and what happened.
So I was actually in the building that I'm in. It had already been rezoned for a business, but every time a new business comes there, they have to get rezoned again. And the only thing about the rezoning that held me up was they only do the hearings like once a month or something like, no, once every few months or something weird to where you have to submit your application by a deadline. And it wasn't expensive. It was only like $50 application fee, but then it has to go through approval, and then you have to get like the fire department to come out and make sure everything's okay. Mm-hmm. And so it was just a long process because I guess I wasn't understanding why I needed to be rezoned because it had already been rezoned. So yeah, that's why I had to do it, just because I was a new business coming there, and they just wanted to make sure that the people in the surrounding community were okay with me being there.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yep, exactly.
You have to go in front of like the...
Say that again.
You have to go in front of the board, and then some of the community will be there. And then you go up there, you tell them what you're doing, and then they'll pull up your facility on the map. And then the community, if they want to object, kind of like in a wedding, if you have any objections, say something or forever hold your peace. and then the community gets to say their piece if they want to. And if not, they'll tell you right then and there if you're approved. And if there are any like stipulations to that approval, they'll tell you right then and there. And then the next day you can go in and get your official business license. So that will hold you up from getting the actual license from your state, I think, or community, whichever license you have
from it's like the city municipality.
You that one. Yeah.
So it depends on your area. Yes. So for me, my facility was a retail store before I came in. So again, it was still a business, but it was a retail business. And then when I came in, of course, mine was now going to be an education center. So I had to have it rezoned also. And I had to get the fire marshal inspection, and I had to get all these people to come out to review it for occupants. Apparently, like, nothing had been done for 20 years because that retail facility had been there for 20 years. So there was all these new things I had to go through. And like you, I'm like, but it was already a business. But to your point, and I don't even know if people know this, but you guys, whenever some type of a business is coming into your community, if you're signed up for like your commissioner's emails or whatever, they'll send you to let you know, hey, an application was submitted for zoning. They want to put a Hardee's down the street. You can show up at that zoning and say, no, we do not want Hardee's here. We don't want it in our community. Get it out of here. And the board will use that to determine whether or not they want to allow that business to come in or not. So just like she said, there were people there. And they could object, or they can just say nothing and don't care. Maybe they want the education school there, so they're not opposed to it. But you have the opportunity to say that. So when you see something in your community and you don't like it there, you have the opportunity to say you didn't want to, whether you know it or not.
And then another thing that held me up in my zoning was the fire department. Once they came out, I guess there was a miscommunication somewhere to where they denied me the first time because all they thought was K through 12 school versus higher education school. So they were like, this doesn't work for K through 12. I'm like, y'all didn't even ask me. I'm not K through 12. So yeah, they had to come out again. So yeah.
That's funny. I had the same problem because they were like, where's the water fountain? You don't have a water fountain. And I'm like, why do I need a water fountain when this is a vocational school? And they were like, oh, we didn't know.
You didn't ask.
So little things. Yeah, little things. So you guys, this is why we're doing this interview, because little things like this can hold up the process or stop the process, or you don't even know to speak up, you know, and thank goodness you did speak up and say, hey, why is that? And then communication is important. You found out they thought you were a K-12. So, because the application doesn't specify, by the way. The application does not specify, depending on where you're at. All right. Tiana says, if you don't mind her asking, what do you charge for tuition? And I want to know how you came up with the number.
So it's different for the blended versus the traditional. The blended right now, it starts at $997.18, so $997.18. And then the traditional class is $1,197.18. And so what I did was, and my program is all inclusive, so they only have to bring paper and pen and bring themselves. Everything else I provide, and I was providing paper and pencil, but I was like, nope. So I just factor in my cost of everything I have to spend for them. So uniforms, books, all their supplies, like watches, stethoscopes, blood pressure cuffs, insurance. What else? The surety bond. Is the insurance? And some other stuff. And then
uniform, books.
Yeah. So I factor in everything that I have to purchase for them and that I give to them. And then I'll factor in how much I would pay my instructor if I were to hire out, so that that's already factored in, so I don't have to factor it in later. And so that's how I'll come up with my costs.
Perfect. You guys, you hear that? So you have to price this stuff. Please. Stop saying my tuition is based upon the person across the street and around the corner, and that's how you chose your tuition. No. Okay? No. Do your due diligence. Find out how much some isolation gowns cost. Find out how much, you know, you want to pay somebody to come in and teach. Do all that and use that to determine your cost. Okay? Girl, I love you. You are awesome.
But I did shop around to other local places like the community college, just to see what they were charging, because I did want to be, you know, competitive and not overcharge or lowball, but what would work for me. And from what I was hearing from some students is, even with all of that, I am still cheaper than other facilities, and I include everything to pay out of pocket extra other places. So
wow. Now, do you have any type of grants that you offer? And if you do, tell us a little bit more about how you got approved for that.
So, yeah, I have one. Well, do I have one? Two. I have one I know for sure right now. and that's WIOA, and that's the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act. And it's basically a adult education grant that covers their tuition costs. They just have to go in and complete the process with the local unemployment office or career center. And then I need to check on my application, actually, for Voc Rehab. They are another one that I'm looking into. And then I also have partnered with one local facility so far that sponsors students. So it's kind of like a work agreement.
That's
as long
good.
As they the student will work for the employer, then they can they'll pay for that student's tuition. So those are my options. Of course, self-pay, which is, they pay everything themselves, and I have payment plans, but that's the only grant so far. I'm working on some other ones, so maybe in the future.
Now tell us about where you went and where did you go to apply for the workforce, the WIOA? Where did you go to apply for that? Through what entity?
It's called Workforce Alabama or Work Alabama, is something like that, but I did it online. Basically turned in the application, and then I had to call the lady like, hey, did you get my application? She's like, oh yeah, I meant to call you. And then she's like, I can come by tomorrow. I was like, okay. Great. So yeah, that's how it was. Really, really quick and easy. It wasn't hard at all. And then when she came by, she just looked around and said, great. I'll approve you. So it was really, really easy and
Yep.
painless.
So usually there's different types of organizations that disseminate the funding, and usually those entities are like an extension of the Department of Labor. So each state is different, whatever it is. Like here we have one called Cobb Works, which is the county, Cobb County, and then Cobb Works. So they help people and they disseminate funds for those grants. So you would have to find out who the person is that disseminates funds for grants, because I tell you, I get that question all the time. Everyone wants to know, well, how can I get funding? And I'm like, you got to get your school approved first, okay? And then you can worry about funding. But once you apply, like she said, but you have to live up to their rules, right? So I think like you have to do an annual report to them to let them know, you know. And so it's really important, you guys, if you do get approved for those funds, if you want to keep getting them, okay, you've got to get a spreadsheet to the side and make sure that you're looking at, okay, how many people came through, how many people actually graduated, how many people passed their test, how many people got a job. Document that stuff, okay? Because if you don't, you can lose the funding
And you have
potentially.
to actually show what you've already done before you can get approved. So you can't just be brand new without a class that went through or a couple classes that's went through before you get funding, because they have to see that those students were successful before they approve you.
Exactly. Exactly. Sade said, how about how long is your program?
4 weeks. The traditional is definitely 4 weeks, and then the blended learning, I typically give them 8 weeks, but I'm thinking about shortening it down to 4 weeks as well, just because with blended, they can kind of work at their own pace, so they can pause and come back and replay. But I'm thinking about shortening it to 4 weeks.
Okay. And then with the blended, I like that. So with blended, do you do like cohorts, or can people just enroll at any time? How do you manage that part of it?
So they still have a start date, and then they still have a scheduled finish day. So it's still
Okay.
cohorts. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Let's see here. I think I have one more question. Oh, if you don't mind answering, because this is a question I get a lot too, is about startup costs. Okay, startup costs. What did it look like for you to do all this and get everything together? What would you say your estimated startup cost was?
I'm probably not a good example for your question. I'm not. So I'm a frugal by nature. So my startup costs, I would say, under $3,000, I think. Because I think the highest thing that I paid for was all of the the zoning and the what is that thing called? Like the insurance and the surety bond and just paying the community college system, because that in and of itself was like $2,000. So I think time fee or a yearly 2 year fee, something like that. But that was like my main cost. Everything else was kind of like maybe a couple hundred dollars for supplies and stuff like that to get started.
Okay, cool. So it's doable. It's doable. Like she said, be frugal, look around, find the cheapest there. Where did you find a lot of your stuff? I know I found a lot of stuff on Craigslist. People tell me they find stuff on OfferUp. Where were you finding your things?
So for isolation gowns and things like that, the most of the ones that I have are reusable, so you just wash them and reuse. And then the disposable ones and the gloves and stuff like that. The first time I ordered it came from, I forget the name, but it's like a supply, some random supply company. But most of the time now, for blood pressure cuffs, I've found through eBay. Order them in bulk, they'll give you a cheaper price. And then the gowns I've ordered, like for for the disposable ones that I do use, Amazon, gloves, Amazon. I think that's the only thing I'm really having to redo that I can think of right now. Unless you can think of something okay. else.
No, you know, like you said, the toothbrushes, stuff like that, those are the reusable things. You know, I think sooner or later, like when you're first in business, it's like, okay, where can I find the cheapest? And then sooner or later, you'll end up finding, okay, this is who I'm going to go with, because the more students you get and the more programs you have, you just don't have time to run around trying to find the cheapest. And so you'll go with what you've learned was the cheapest and has good customer service too, because that's huge. I can't tell you how many times people send you stuff and it isn't right, and then you got to send it back. That's time away from your business. So, you know, sometimes if paying a little bit more so that you don't have to worry about that, or the return process is seamless, then it's worth it. So,
and that's when I first bought my stuff, I did buy in bulk, and then I contacted like the vendor just so I can go ahead and build that relationship. Like, hey, I'm going to be ordering from you a lot, so you know, give me this price, yeah. and I'll order from you like constantly. And they were pretty much like, oh, okay, we'll give you this price. And so far that's how I've done my stuff. And I ordered like about 200 of most of the stuff, like toothbrushes and toothpaste and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it wasn't even expensive. That was like $12 for 200 or something like that. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those toothbrushes are cheap. I think the one I was using was like 11 cents a piece. It's cheap. So, you guys, we're going to start rounding up the interview. So if you have questions, now's the time to go ahead and submit those questions so I can ask them. I want you to tell us, what is the most gratifying or satisfying part of owning this school?
I think freedom. Not having to kind of answer to anybody, kind of getting to do things like, you know, how I want to, like as far as like the schedule, and then also just seeing, I won't say my work, but hearing the students like tell me like, oh my gosh, I've learned so much, like, and especially from students who've taken other courses before, and maybe they just need to be, you know, they lost their certification and have to get it again. They're like, wow, mm-hmm. I did not learn half of this, you know, in my last class and stuff like that. So just seeing the return and knowing that it's going toward my goal, like, you know, the goal was to get quality A's and people who actually care about doing the right thing and know mm-hmm. what they're doing, and to see them be that is like the best thing. Like, it's just every time, especially like after they go to clinical and they're like, wait, they didn't do XYZ like you said, do XYZ. And I, you know, so it's just that part, seeing how much they've learned and how they, you know, want to do the right thing and stuff like that. So I think that's like the biggest one.
Biggest gratification too. Awesome. I like that you said freedom, because you're right. You know, you get to determine, no, I'm not going to do classes on Friday because Friday I want to do whatever. You know, you still have a level of freedom. Are you working for anyone else currently, or are you devoting all of your time and energy to the school?
I quit my job.
Yay!
Yes, it's just this right now. And like you said, the freedom of like, okay, in December, I'm not holding classes because it's holiday time, you know?
Okay.
So, yeah, that freedom is just amazing. Not having to say, well, I can't come to the family gathering for the 10th time because I have to work is very, very nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that. All right, Ted, tell me what state you're in, because that's going to answer the question that you just asked me about the requirements for RN. Are you in the same state as she is? I'm not sure, so let us know. Sade said, what is your biggest worry regarding keeping your school running? Do you ever worry about rent?
No.
Not with 14 students, she is.
Well, no, that's why I said I'm not a good example of like the part, just because I don't want to offend anybody, but I pray and like I meditate and all that good stuff. So I kind of prayed on my building, and it was a very specific prayer, and I got that. So I don't have any rent at all. So I don't have the expense. I don't have utility bills. Wow. I don't have any of those expenses. So that's why I said I'm not a good example of that.
Of startup.
Yeah. So no, I do not worry about, that's not a worry currently. I do plan to expand because I do want to have a career pathway. So LPN, RN, things like that. So eventually I will need to worry about rent, but hopefully I'll have enough in savings to kind of not have to worry about that in the long run either.
Mm-hmm. So Savitra said, is it best to lease or purchase a site? Savitra, I think that that is a question for your own, like, what are your personal goals? You know, so if you want to own a space and you don't mind devoting the money to the space and you know you're going to be in business for 20 years, and even when you're not, you know you're going to hand that space off to your kids and things like that, then yeah, leasing a space, like actually purchasing rather, would probably be for you. But if you aren't there financially, or your credit score isn't there, and you're not sure if you want to be there, maybe you just want to get a small place and grow later, then maybe a leasing would be an option for you. You know,
I would suggest though.
I hope I answered your question.
I would suggest renting, just because you don't know like how it's going to take off, and I wouldn't want anyone to, you know, get into a mortgage, 30-year mortgage, and then you outgrow that space in a month or two, or, you know, something like that, and then you're stuck there, you know, longer than you want to be. So I would say start smaller, or start with rent, and then see how it does for like 6 months, and then scale bigger before you go into something super permanent starting out.
Do you use and how do you find a clinical site? So you're in New York.
So I have to shop
You have to have a go ahead.
Oh, I had to shop around because in where I'm at, there's this big company that owns like 99% of the nursing homes in my area. So, and they hold their own classes, so they say. So all of their facilities were kind of out of my range for doing clinical sites. And like I said, that's like, if there's 10 facilities in my area, they own 9 of them. So I had to shop around and just like, hey, look, I need you to be my clinical site. Yeah, you have to definitely shop around, do some homework, make sure they're not monopolized and all that kind of stuff. But it did take me meeting with people and just talking. I'm not a talker. Just talk and network. So
yeah, definitely identify who the decision-making person is, sell them on your vision, find out what their facility mission is. I always say, because if their facility mission aligns with your mission, then what better way to talk to them with that language? And just get a list. All 20 facilities, find out who the contact is, call, visit, make a meeting, bring donuts, whatever you got to do, and get them to agree to have your students come there. But in most states, it has to be a long-term care facility, so it has to be a nursing home. Some states do amend that and say, okay, it could be hospice, or, you know, very rarely do I see assisted living being accepted. In some states, it can, but for the most part, it has to be a nursing home.
We are working on that in my state. Because, like I said, if it's only nursing homes, I only have like 2 options. So I'm definitely working on that to get more clinical sites available.
Well, you guys, if any of you guys that are joining us today are in the CNA Instructor Secret Community, it's a community where we all come together, aspiring CNA school owners as well as CNA school owners like Ms. Melton. We all come together and share ideas. And let me tell you something. She is the top contributor. I love your posts. She's always posting something that is very thought-provoking, something that encourages people to think about things. I know she'd have me researching all types of stuff. but I love it because you're adding value to the group. And I encourage all of you guys to do the same. And I want to tell you, thank you for that. She had a student who was larger and could not fit the isolation gowns, and she could not find a supplier to supply large isolation gowns. So this woman went and handcrafted a large isolation gown for her student. If that ain't dedication, I don't know what is. I thought that was awesome. Yeah. You're welcome. All right, Sade, last question here. Are you marketing and promoting organically, or what other sources are you using to get those students?
So I do market. I don't think organically, if you mean like word of mouth, I do get word of mouth quite a bit, but mainly comes from me marketing. And just, I think it's because I'm so new, so I still have to get the word out that I'm here. So I do job fairs in the local area, because most time they're free. And then that way I can get email addresses and things like that to, you know, send them emails, say, hey, this is how you sign up, that type of thing. So any kind of free event that's in the community, I go to. Any kind of task force meeting in the community with business owners or what is it, the Department of Human Resources, whenever they meet, I go to the meeting and say, hey, if you have clients that want to do this, send them my way. The local health task force meetings where they're trying to improve, like see what we can do in the health field, I go to those. And then, of course, I do the like Facebook ads and things like that. So I definitely do market.
I love that you are in the community, because guess what, people? You think when she goes to each one of those meetings, she's getting a student at that moment right then and there? No. But guess what? She's planting a seed. So when a person does come in contact with a person who wants to go to school, the first person they're going to think about is, oh yeah, Mrs. Milton, she's at all of our meetings and she has a CNA school. You should go to her. They're the first person that they're going to think about. You've got to sow seeds in your community. Go to those meetings. I remember being at meetings full time.
Yeah.
Okay. The Chamber of Commerce, the Small Business Association, the Department of Labor, like any meeting I was there, like, hey. So it takes up a lot of your time, but it's worth it in the end.
It is. It definitely is.
Yes.
So,
I want to thank you so, so much for allowing me to interview you today. Thank you so much. If you guys are watching this on a replay, definitely still post your questions down here. I know she'll come back to this and to this post and answer them. If you are just coming on, please, like I said, click the share button. Somebody needs to hear this. Somebody wants to hear this. And even if they're not in this business, it's definitely going to still give them some ideas, because she provided us with a lot of great insight, a lot of great information. So thank you so much, Mrs. Milton, for joining
me
today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. So we're going to get going, guys. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. I love you, and I hope to see you guys October. Let me get it right, Saturday. October 14th. October 14th, I'm doing a webinar at 8:30 p.m. with Portia Owensby. She is a marketing strategist, and she talks to you about different ways that you can get organic traffic via the internet and how to put content together. Because I'm telling you right now, you can make every ad you want in the world. You can make every flyer you want in the world. But if it's not speaking to the person, they're going to trash it or they're going to scroll. Okay. So you've got to learn, and it's a skill, and I'm still learning, and I'm still not the best at it. Okay. It's a skill. You have to learn how to make eye-catching, breathtaking, show-stopping content that makes people say, let me see what she's talking about, okay? So that's what this webinar is going to be about. And sometimes you have to be crafty. Like, one thing I want to say is you better have a blog on your website, you guys. You got to have a blog. And on your blog, you should be posting things that CNAs would probably be looking up, okay? Like, how much does a CNA get paid? Or how do I transfer my CNA license, or whatever things that they would be talking about and be looking up? You need to have that as a blog post on your blog, and you need to make it look pretty, and you need to sell yourself at the end of it and do all those things. So anyway, I'd like to invite you to the webinar on October 14th for that content marketing webinar. And I will put a link down here shortly. Yes, October 14th. I'll put the link down here shortly. So if you would like to join us, I'd love to see you there. So thank you so much again, Ms. Melton. We're going to get going. I got to pick up my babies. It's that time.
Okay.
All right, you have a good day. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed Ms. Milton's interview and the insight that she provided, but I want you to always remember that everyone's journey in starting a CNA school is just a little different. As long as you get started and stay consistent, you will never fail. If you would like to learn more about The Secret Cocktail and how we can help you start a CNA school, please visit us online at thesecretcocktail.com, or you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube by searching The Secret Cocktail. I am Victoria Randall, your pusher, pushing you past your fears so you can be the entrepreneur you are destined to be. Until next time.